Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on Member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 27th day of November, Anno Domini 2021, and you, it's the 331st day of the year. You lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 9 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news.
Ta-da.
This, on Monday, GoDaddy disclosed that an unknown attacker had gained unauthorized access to the system used to provision the company's managed WordPress sites, impacting up to 1.2 million of their WordPress customers. Note that this number does not include the number of customers of those websites that are affected by this breach, and some GoDaddy customers have multiple managed WordPress sites in their accounts, and GoDaddy also owns a whole bunch of other things that we'll talk about in a minute. According to the report filed by GoDaddy with the SEC, that's how you know it's serious.
Yeah.
The attacker initially gained access via a compromised password.
Shock.
On September 6th of 2021, and when discovered on November 17th of 2021, at which point their access was revoked. While the company took immediate action to mitigate the damage, the attacker had more than 2 months to establish persistence, so anyone currently using GoDaddy's managed WordPress product should assume compromise until they can confirm this is not the case. It appears that GoDaddy was storing secure FTP credentials, SFTP credentials, either as plain text or in a format that could be reversed into plain text. They did this rather than use a salted hash or public key, both of which are considered industry best practices for SFTP. This allowed an attacker direct access to password credentials without the need to crack them. Clearly, somebody needs to get fired. The SEC filing indicates that the attacker had access to user email addresses, customer numbers, the original WordPress admin password that was set at the time of provisioning, which so many people don't change. The SSL private keys, all of these could be used of use to an attacker, but one item in particular stands out, the SFTP and database usernames and passwords of active customers. If you run or use a WordPress site on GoDaddy, TSO Host, Media Temple, 123 Reg, Domain Factory, Heart Internet, or Host Europe, change all your passwords immediately. Oh, and relax. Soundbites doesn't use any of those hosting sites.
You should probably explain to folks what WordPress is.
WordPress is a content management system. That is to say, you set up a framework into which people can put posts. And Soundbites is a WordPress site. So it is easy for Steve to add posts about, you know, when he says we'll post it on our website, it's easy for him to do that.
Yeah,
we have the bulletin boards that people, the forums that people can put stuff in, and it just is easy to use. And so a lot of people use it. So not only do a lot of people use it to host, but a lot of people are members of those. So if you are a member of one of those, you need to, all of you are members of the Soundbites website. Like I said, don't worry, we're not using any of those hosts, so we're okay. But be very, very careful. It's not a bad idea to go and change all your passwords anyway. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is GoDaddy breached, over 1.2 million affected. And your choices are, I'll change my passwords immediately, I don't know if I need to change them, pretty sure I don't use them. Going commando, baby. and other. So far, we've got 19 votes, and pretty sure I don't use them. Is the waffle answer pretty sure I don't use
it? But they don't. I guarantee you, most of them probably didn't take the time to go check and
see. That's exactly right.
A lot of people
right.
don't know who their back end server is. They just
no.
And what should happen is that all the people who run all those affected sites should be letting all their users know. But of course, most of them will not.
Yeah, they won't. Right. No. It would take time and effort on their part.
Right. Anyway, if you said other, or if you have something else you'd like to say, please head on over to our website at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. Scroll down on the right under fascinating stuff. You'll see the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least the number one item under poll discussion is 27, Nov 21, GoDaddy breached, over 1.2 million affected. And, of course, whether or not you have more to say or whatever, please vote in the poll. And please, you can also give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Because it's already starting. I mean, I've gotten a few calls from a number of my clients, and they were saying how the spam's already starting up, folks.
I've already gotten two calls just today. You heard one of them come in my phone.
Yeah.
Just today saying that my account is, there's a problem with my account at a bank I don't do business with.
Yep.
Again, folks, we can't stress enough that if you have to think about answering a phone call because you don't know the number, don't. If it's really that important, they'll call you back.
Or they'll leave a message and you'll be
able to understand. Or if they say that, this account or that account is compromised and you need to contact them right away.
Yep.
What you do is simply grab your bank card, look on the back. It has a toll-free number that you can call and actually talk to a live person and truly get it. I got the same thing. Noticed that my Amazon account was they got a charge of over $2,000, and I needed to call them to verify that it was really all right.
Yeah.
I just deleted that. I went right online to the Amazon site where I have all my information in the card, and it's still saying zero balance.
Yeah. And if you use the number in the back of your card, that's going to be the right number.
Right.
So you're not going to find the wrong number in an internet search. You don't have to go digging somewhere. What I always find annoying is that if you lose your card, you don't have the number to call to say you lost your card.
Right.
So that's why you have the apps for your banks now.
Right. That's what I do. I have my wife has had issues with her business card. Several times, as a matter of fact. So what we have done is I have shown her how to add the bank app, and you can freeze and unfreeze your card immediately. It's instant.
Yeah. So more and more banks are starting to do that.
Because most of the time, if you do call and report your card lost, they cancel everything and mail you new ones, which can take a week.
Exactly.
If you then find it a few minutes later.
Doesn't matter.
Too late. It's been reported lost.
And then you've got to go through remembering all the places that you signed up to have it automatically withdraw stuff. Pain in butt.
Yep. One of my cards gives me a report on that.
That's nice.
Because it sees repetitive charges of the same amount. And so, you must have this set up for automatic payment.
Yep. Yeah, like our Genie or your phone bill or that.
Right. Yeah. So be very careful.
Because the scams are only going to get worse between now and Christmas, folks. You're going to hear fake calls about various stores or banks on fraudulent charges.
Or shipping. We need, there's a problem with your shipping. Give us your tracking number.
Yeah, the USPS has got a problem. Please call them. They don't call you. They'll leave a note.
And they know your shipping number and address already.
Yeah, they know
all that. They don't need your track. If somebody asks for your tracking number, they want to steal your stuff.
Yeah.
Understand that. There's nobody, there's no company on earth that doesn't already know your tracking number. Otherwise, how could they get your package to you?
And the other thing, folks, if you say, I don't know the number. You folks are great at Googling. I know 99% of the folks are great at Googling. All you got to do is Google that particular company and bring up the, or even go to the white pages and look for that company's name and phone number, and it'll bring it up.
Make sure you get the right company,
yeah,
not a fake.
But like
ad,
you say, the best thing is most folks have, you know, bank cards or, you know, other statements with the actual phone numbers on it.
Right.
Amazon, when they send their statement, oh, there's the phone number if you got to, you know, call and dispute something. It's on there. So yep. You know it. Yep. Don't fall for these stupid emails. Well, you've been just charged for this or that, or the bank charges you this month. No, pick up the phone and call them.
The sort of the bigger annoyance is there's no penalty to these companies for having problems.
Right.
Somebody made a mistake somewhere, and that's what caused this problem. At least they're announcing their mistake and telling people, but there's no penalty, and so there's no incentive for companies to hire IT people and security people to stop these problems before they happen. You know, if the car industry had these types of problems every other week, you know, a million cars crashed because of this problem, there'd be uproar, and
right. They'd
take the cars off the road
right. Until
the problem was found.
Oh, I saw one great YouTube where these scammers were calling, you know, and saying that they're from the Social Security and there's a warrant out there. Well, these two gentlemen here in the States, they must be super hackers because they wound up hacking into the scammer's system and brought up their camera on their laptop.
Nice.
So that you could see the two, these other individuals that are pulling these scams. He goes, well, I can see you. And he wound up posting all their information because all of a sudden they're trying to cover up the cameras.
I bet they were in a room full of people doing this.
Could have been, because you did hear more voices, but yep. You only saw these two guys, the way his camera was set up. It was facing at this other guy's desk that was behind them. They're both trying to cover it up. Yes, busted. Again, it was coming from India.
Of course it was.
There was an interesting story about one of the, there was a big botnet. I think it was the Western Digital hard drives that were had a flaw. And suddenly they started deleting all their contents. And the security people who dug into it think it was a group of bad guys was using this flaw as a botnet to attack other people. And another group of bad guys got mad and deleted all of the software so they couldn't attack them anymore. So two bad guys are, so we're in the middle of a bot gang war.
Yeah, right.
Cool.
and nothing like a bot gang war.
Yeah,
really.
The poor people whose drives, you know, erase themselves are just stuck.
Right. That's why we have backups.
Yeah.
Yep.
To the phones.
For most people, they thought it was their backup drive, but then people don't realize that if you delete it from the main drive, that's not a backup anymore. Now that's your only copy.
Right. Also, backups is a plural word.
Yeah.
Back to the phones. Our first caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. Hi, Larry. What's up?
Happy Thanksgiving, guys.
Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Thank you, sir. I'm getting too obvious. Dave recognized me before. I came to Larry in Rochester. I do have a question. I finished setting up my new iMac. My problem, though, is it updated the Microsoft 365 account and everything. And now when I go into iCloud, which is where I keep all of my documents now, I can't open the file. It'll come back and it'll give me the file name, and then it says this document is either deleted or not currently active or accessible. And so the only way I can get it open is to actually go to iCloud, open that document, then everything is fine. That document then, if I open up Word or Excel or something like that, will open. But for right now, any document that I have not opened since the new install, I get the same message every time. And the only way around it is actually go to iCloud, open the document, then it'll open up afterwards. I have no idea what's happened here.
Do you have iCloud syncing to your local computer, or are you opening the documents from the website?
I believe I have iCloud syncing to my local computer.
All right, so there's an iCloud Drive icon that
yes.
you go to.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It may be the file associations are trying to go to Apple's Office apps instead of Microsoft's. If you go into your iCloud desktop, pick one of those files and do a get info on it from the file menu. There's an open with command, and you can make sure it's set to open with Word, for example, and then not Pages. And then under that, there's a change all button. So that will make all of those, say, doc files or docx files open with Pages. I'm sorry, open with Word and not Pages.
Okay, wait a minute. I think that might.
It's a little easier to find the file associations on the Mac. But we don't call them file associations. We say open with.
Open with.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the problem. I'm not actually synced to my Mac because up in the upper right-hand corner, I would have that little icon that shows me the iCloud drive, right?
Not in the menu bar, no. It would be in the sidebar of a Finder window.
Oh. Okay. Yeah, I do have it there. Okay, so iCloud drive, I have that open. And now, I don't know, I don't want to take up your time, but if you could repeat that, please.
Find one of the files that isn't opening.
Okay.
Click on it once and do a get info from the file menu or command I to bring up the information palette. There's an open with section in that window, and you can specify which application you want to open that type of document.
Got it.
And make sure it's a doc file or docx file, and it's set to open with Microsoft Word.
Got it.
And the same for Excel and PowerPoint and the other file types.
Oh, yes. Now, I have LibreOffice. LibreOffice has zero problem. It just opens it.
Yeah. But I kind of think part of the problem is that Microsoft Office assumes you're using Microsoft OneDrive Cloud. And
no, I don't use that.
You have to go through hoops to get it to open the Apple Drive Cloud.
I see. Yeah, I don't use OneDrive.
Yeah, in the Microsoft Open box, it defaults to OneDrive, and then there's an other where you can then open a file on your local computer. And since the iCloud Drive is syncing to your local computer, that's where you would find the iCloud Drive files.
I see. Okay, you just answered my question for me. I'm going to get in here and dig through it and get this thing to open. The only reason I haven't dumped Microsoft 365 right away because I already paid for it for the year, but I think I'm done. I'm going to stick with LibreOffice. Yeah. I just never have a problem with
it. That's right. Yeah.
They set you up for that automatic renewal just so yeah. Like you see the notice on your credit card. Oh, I was going to cancel that. Well, I'll do it next year.
I was going to plan to do that, and all of a sudden I got hit. I'd already paid for it.
Yep.
I just wasn't thinking about it at all, so now I'm stuck for 2022.
Well, I think if you cancel it now.
If only there were some sort of program you could put a reminder in for next year.
Or if you cancel the automatic renewal now, it won't automatically renew, but you'll start getting warning messages that you need to renew.
Right.
Okay, because I think now the caveat is if you don't renew, you can't open any of your old files or something like that?
The files will open, but the programs will not. So you can't open Word anymore, but you can still open a Word file with LibreOffice or Pages.
Yeah, I mean, you still got the best of two worlds.
Particularly if you're not using OneDrive.
Yeah. And I think it'll open as read-only, but you can't make changes to the file.
If I opened it with LibreOffice, I could, right?
Yes.
I
edit
it. Yep.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And Larry, just to be fair, your name and number shows up on my display, so that's how I know it's you.
Call ID.
Oh.
Busted.
Okay, got me.
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you, guys.
You take care, my friend.
The answer to my problem. Thank you.
Have fun. Bye-bye. Yeah, a lot of people don't really need Microsoft Office.
Mm-hmm.
They can do everything they want to do either online with the iCloud. What do they call it? I'm sorry. What do they call it?
iWork.
iWork.
They don't really claim that name anymore.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
Yeah.
The iWork stuff or Google Docs or, you know, whatever, but or LibreOffice or that sort of fare, but they don't. You don't really need to be paying Microsoft.
And a lot of people say that's what they're used to. But the new version is going to look a little different.
Right.
So you might as well go to a free program that looks a little different.
Right.
Yeah, and especially if you use it, don't get charged for the storage.
That's right.
I mean, I know you've got, from doing all your articles, a heck of a lot more, you know, documents in that state than I do, but it is so nice. It doesn't matter whether I'm on my phone, a tablet, a computer. I could be across in California, log into my Google account, and I can go to my Google Drive and see a document, whether it's a spreadsheet or a presentation or even a Word document. It's there. And it doesn't matter. And I could print it off to that particular printer right there.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's silly not to. Oh, well, it's something new. Yeah, well, yeah, when you get a new car, you got to learn where the buttons and everything else is. So what's the difference?
I've got about 20,000 documents.
Oh, I believe it.
And I'm only using 2.7 gigabytes.
Is that all?
Because most of it is free storage.
Yeah.
All of that stuff is EPUBs and PDFs.
Yeah.
That stuff.
There you go.
All right. We are going to take a quick break. So if you're on the line, stay on the line. We'll get to you. If you're not on the line, why? Call us at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. We'll be back with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 29 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. Are you allowed to use those four-letter words in the air?
I know. I'll probably get, you know, I should have probably did a dump.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. We're going to get beep this week.
Yeah. Yeah. Frozen rain.
Exactly. Hard rain.
White rain.
White rain. Yeah.
All right, back
chocolate
to the
rain.
Enough. More than enough.
Kill his mic.
Yeah, back to the phones. Our next caller is Karen from Brockport, New York. Hi, Karen. What's up?
Hi. Well, first, I have to say I'm a member.
Yay!
And my question also has to do with IT, which we were just talking about. I have a new iPad since July. The backup using the iCloud worked fine up until recently. Then I started getting error messages saying I didn't have enough iCloud space to do the backup and wanted me to buy more iCloud space. So I looked up the directions on how to see what was actually being stored in the iCloud and discovered I had more than 500 photos of screenshots of the screen of the iPad, apparently that was taken when we had trouble trying to unsuccessfully shut off the iPad.
Yeah, you can take a screenshot by pushing two buttons at the same time.
Yeah. So I looked up how to delete all those photos, and now I've got 840 meg of 5 gig used in the iCloud and 42 gig of 256 gig used on the iPad, but I still can't do backup. I'm still getting error message saying there's not enough iCloud space available.
Yeah, you've got 5 gigs on iCloud, and you've got 40 gigs on your iPad. So that won't 40 won't fit into 5. So you either decide that you want to back up manually to your computer, which is a pain. You plug the wire into the computer, open the iTunes window, and hit backup. So you have to remember to do that. Or you can purchase the additional cloud space. It's 99 cents a month for 50 gigs of cloud space and let it keep doing it automatically.
Okay, so my numbers don't work out even though I deleted all those extraneous photos.
Photos, individual screenshots are very small.
Oh.
But since it says you're using 40 gigs on the iPad, it's probably going to want to have 40 gigs on iCloud too.
Oh, okay. Well, that may have come from a new game I tried to install also.
Those take a lot of space, particularly with the data files.
The applications themselves are not backed up, but the data file in them is. And so that could be where that extra space is coming from, too. There is a section in your iPad called iPad Storage. And it will tell you what stuff is taking up what storage. And so you can see what kinds of stuff, if it's photos or videos or documents, that's using the space on the iPad.
Yeah.
And sometimes things you can delete will bring you down to the 5 gigabyte free storage space. But for most people, 5 gigabytes of free space isn't enough to have for a full backup. We wish Apple would give us a little more for free. Maybe 5 gigs per device would be handy, but even that's not enough. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the 50 gigs for 99 cents a month isn't too bad.
Okay, well that's what I looked at and discovered that the photos were taking up most of the space. So.
Yeah, and that's pretty typical.
Yeah.
Couldn't she move them over to Google Cloud?
Well, it's Google only gives you 5 gigs free.
15.
Well, 15 now. Yeah. Split between.
It's still not 40.
Yeah.
Okay, but none of those photos were actually photos that I wanted. They were inadvertently taken screenshots.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like Steve said, screenshots are not that big. They're not taking up as much space as 40 gigs worth.
Yeah. Well, so I'll have to check into a game I just tried to install.
Well, maybe even so, that if unless that has over 40 gig of data files. It's probably everything else you've got on your iPad. The simple fact is that the amount of storage you have available on the iPad compared to the amount of storage that Apple gives you in iCloud, there's no comparison.
Yeah.
You know, you've got 128 gig in your iPad and 5 gig on iCloud. You're just never going to be able to stuff all that into a 5-pound bag.
Question, I don't know if iPad has it. You know how on the PC you can get different programs that'll tell you what's taking up the space?
Yeah, that's the iPad storage list.
That's what
and whether it'll break down whether it's into photos or documents.
Yep.
And you know, versus say text files.
And it'll even give you suggestions about what you can do to manage your space.
Okay. Yeah, I wasn't sure whether the iPad had it or not. Okay. Does that solve your problem, Karen?
Well, at least it gives you a direction.
Doesn't solve it, but tells me what I should do next.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. That's solving part of it.
That's it. Thanks, Karen.
Okay. Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, especially now that devices are, you know, 64 gigs minimum, and so some of the iPads have a terabyte storage drive, and you still only get 5 gigs of cloud space.
Yep.
I'm sorry, I still go back to when I first got my first big computer and I got a 300 meg hard drive. It was a monster. I mean, this thing was like 3 inches tall. It was an RLL drive.
You mean a 30 meg?
No, this was 300.
That's huge.
Back then it was.
Most of them were like 10.
My first hard drive was 100 megs.
Yeah, no, I got it from Dan's computers back when he was, I'll still never forget, you went into his store and you had to weave your way around all the used equipment.
Yeah.
And he goes over, yeah, I got this over here in this box, and, you know, because I had a big tower. And like I say, it was this big monster RLL drive and it was 300 meg.
That's huge.
Oh, wow. That's going to do me for a lifetime.
I remember the first time I got a terabyte drive. How super! The first drive I got for the Frog Pond was 20 meg, and because we only did messages, it held an awful lot of messages.
Yeah.
Then I got a second drive that was 40 meg, twice as much.
Yep.
Some of the terabyte flash drives now that are coming out.
Well, I told you my Pi 400 has a thumb drive that is quite literally the size of my thumbnail, and it's half a terabyte.
I mean, it's unbelievable, folks. You know, the way things have gotten so much smaller, so much faster.
And that's a lovely segue into something I wanted to talk about
this week,
which is Christmas presents.
Yeah.
Those of you who are looking for Christmas presents for your favorite geek or nerd or dork, I don't care what you call each other, you might want to think about flash drives, thumb drives, whatever you want to call them. You can't really have too many. One thing I might suggest, if you're affluent, is something like PCloud.
Yep.
It's currently they're still having their sale. You can get lifetime storage, 2 terabytes of storage, 75% off. It seems to be Black Friday ends today, so today's the day. And you can share that among each other, and you know, so you can, 2 terabytes is a decent amount these days anyway. And that's not terribly expensive for a whole family, or for an individual. It's also pretty cheap, and you should be aware that those are the kind of things that are most useful. Getting somebody thumb drives, always a big deal. Even terabyte thumb drives are not expensive these days. So you can pretty easily add, you know, another storage medium. So, for example, with Karen, she had 40 gig of data. You could back that up onto a 100 gig thumb drive and still have room to do it 2.5 times more.
You just gave me another idea from a previous talk that we were having before the show started, gift cards.
Yes.
Sign people up if you want to give a gift that keeps on giving, is sign them up. You can get subscriptions too, like Revo Uninstaller and the various spy programs or antivirus programs.
Yep.
You can sign up to these various sites, Super Anti-Spyware and all those. You can get gift cards and pay for a year's membership to that for the individual. That way their machines are protected, whether it's, even NPass, you can get the pro version there, you know. And, again, it keeps track of all their passwords. You know, it's a gift that will keep on giving throughout the whole year and keeping their machines safe and protected.
And every time they have to look up a password, they will think of you.
Yes. And
it's,
I mean,
the only
thing you have to remember is just the one password once you set it up, and that's your master password to get into it. Otherwise, NPass does all the rest.
And so, listen, if you're hoping for something interesting for Christmas, why not put it out there in the world by giving us a call and saying it on the air, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. Maybe your significant other or insignificant other, no judgment, is listening, and you'll be able to put that out there and maybe find that in your stocking or under the tree or under the Hanukkah bush,
whatever,
which isn't a thing.
Yep.
So give us a call and let us know what cool tech gadget you'd like for the holidays. And by the way, for a mere $100, you can get a Raspberry Pi 400 with everything except the monitor. And everybody's got a monitor.
Well, or that could be an additional gift.
Exactly right.
I mean, you know, monitors are so dirt cheap now.
That's right.
You can get a nice, you know, 30-inch monitor or even TV. And it's got the HDMI hookups to it, so you're good to go. And the Raspberry Pi can handle that, too.
As long as it has an HDMI connection.
You're going.
Yep.
And the Raspberry Pi 4 has it.
Yep. I'll tell you, I'm in love with my Raspberry Pis. I may need to get another one at some point. I think that's coming up pretty soon. But you can get them, you know, check out Woot. I don't think there are any today.
Just the 4 or the 400?
Yes. Yes.
Both.
The 4 or the 400. I don't know if or is the correct term here. But it depends. You know, if I want to keep... One of the things I like about the 400 is that it has... You can get an 8 gig version.
Right.
Which I like. Which for some of the things I do, having that kind of extra...
Oomph
is good.
Yep.
But the 400 is an all-in-one product. So, you know, you can hook it to your TV and just set it in the corner and switch over to it anytime you want to do something. So,
yeah, like I say, the 4s are also good whether you want to do like I do backup storage, and then I've got another one as a workstation.
That's right.
And then I've got two others that are Raspberry Pi 3s that run ham stuff for me, which are like, best way to describe it, folks, is like a node that folks can come through. There's various communication packages, and Echo Link happens to be one in DMR, and I've got it set up for those. I know a lot of folks don't understand that, but it's, again, another, for, you know, what it cost me back for the Raspberry Pi 3s, I got it set up, and, you know, I can use it, plus anybody else that wants to connect to it. It's dirt cheap. It was easy to set up, a lot of fun. And, oh, if it all of a sudden, you know, needs updating or want to change it, no big deal. It's just taking the flash card out, re-putting a different image on it, which is not hard. You can go to YouTube and see so many videos on doing so many projects with the Raspberry Pi. You might as well just plan on starting in the morning and spending a whole weekend just going through some of the topics.
Yep.
And I'm not kidding. There are literally hundreds upon thousands of projects out there that you could do with a Raspberry Pi. I mean, I've got friends that are controlling their alarm system to home security versus doing turning on lights and temperature controls. You know, throughout the day, they can all set it automatically through the Raspberry Pi to lower the temperatures, even though they don't have the fancy, you know, things and that. And they're doing it for dirt cheap because the Raspberry Pi will handle it. And you hook up a hard drive to it. You got tons of storage for, you know, storing programs and everything else. And the various versions of Raspberry Pi will do so much.
Yep. And you should be aware that it looks like, at least at Canakit, the 400s are available right now. The 4s are back-ordered.
Chips are the biggest thing. Yep. I mean, I wanted to get an amp, and right now they're backlogged until February. Because, again, you know, they're all transistorized and everything else, and chips are still probably sitting out in some freighter somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. Also, you need to be aware that on the 4s and the 3s, and even on the 400, but it's harder to get to, there's a 40-pin connector.
Oh, yeah.
And you can attach a board to that. They call them hats, hardware attached on top. Horrible name. But they're Raspberry Pi hats because they sit on top of the Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, they're a hat.
And they can do all kinds of things. There's a... there's one for Google Voice. You can turn your Raspberry Pi into a Google assistant.
Yeah.
With this hat, there's
like I say, the sky's the limit. You know, yeah. I mean, it's just out there, and they even have frames where you can stack multiple hats and everything else by connecting them with ribbon cables and hard drives and that for easier accessibility and getting it, you know, the various parts on it and that. I mean, I use two hats on those two nodes that I was telling you about. So they're like miniature modems that talk to the internet and make the connection to, say, Echo Link or DMR, because that's what it is. It's talking over the internet.
And then there's one that will connect your Raspberry Pi to your Lego set to run all the motors. Tell me that's not a great thing to do Christmas morning.
Like I said, you could
go. And that hat's $10. It's $10. Come on.
You're going to. Well, you know what? I think a lot of folks will be skeptical and thinking, well, how good can this be since it's so cheap?
Well, really
gotta,
good.
Well, you got to think about it, folks. Think of your just your greeting cards nowadays. You can get a greeting card that opens up, and you can record a song on it or a saying or anything else and personalize it. That's just a small little chip buried into a card. Just think of, you know, this is about the size of a deck of cards, maybe two stacked on top of each other. And it can do so much. Because technology has gotten so advanced. You know, you see it in your phones, how they're making those smaller. Your watches nowadays. Matter of fact, I just saw an ad on TV for this ring that you can wear. and it'll now tell you your heartbeat, your exercise rate, whether you're coming down with a cold. You know, it can warn you ahead of time. It's unbelievable.
A lot of the smartwatches are doing that now, too.
Yeah, and it's all built in because it's so small, and microchips are way beyond what, you know, you might be used to back in the day when you used to have that big clunker of a computer sitting on your desk and all it had was two hard drives.
Right.
That's decades ago, folks, and far past that.
Yep. And I'll tell you, the amount, obviously, if you're the sort of person who enjoys doing this stuff, you are absolutely going to love the look on the person's face when they open up that hat or that new Raspberry Pi, and they're just going to have months and years of fun with it. So,
and there's so many YouTube videos out there showing you different projects that you can do with it. They'll actually walk you through it. They'll give you links on, oh, well, you might need this file to add on to it into your code and all that. But they walk you through it step by step. And what's nice about it is, oh, wait a minute, I missed that. Well, all right, you back up a little bit and you pause it and play it a couple more times if you need to take your time getting through the instructions. I mean, it can't be any easier than that versus, say, watching something on TV and all of a sudden it went by and, oh, shoot, I missed what he said.
Also, if you're the sort of person who learns better by reading instructions, most of them have links to a page.
Yep.
With
step
the list by of step. Instructions, step by step.
Yeah.
I tell you, you'll rarely be bored again, I promise you. It's a lot of fun.
Like I say, you could go blind looking at all the different stuff that you could do. Yeah, go cross-eyed.
I've got several Raspberry Pis up and running at the moment, and I can remote desktop into them so I can run the graphical user interface.
I've got five.
Yeah.
One I carry with me. Matter of fact, I got one in the car that I carry with me that I can connect to my, it's because it's tethered to my cell phone.
Right.
Because I've had people, wait a minute, how are you doing that?
Yeah.
Just off the cell. Yeah, but how? You don't have internet in this vehicle? No, it's tethered to my phone.
Right.
That's cool. Yeah, that's the
many
fun
phones.
Of it.
Many phones can have a hotspot that can be turned on. If you have, let me just suggest you have unlimited data.
Yeah.
Because you'd be amazed at how much data that sucks down. But if you have unlimited data, most phones will allow you to create a hotspot. Most carriers will allow you to create a hotspot.
Some of them charge you extra, though.
Some of them charge you extra if they
check your plan.
Yes,
like you
check
said.
Your plan. But if you have unlimited data and you have the right to create a hotspot, you can do it anywhere. I've sat on the beach with my Chromebook and written a book using my phone as a hotspot. I've been on the train. And my wife has done her Facebook farming through the phone. Take a few minutes. Check with your carrier as to whether or not you're allowed to do hotspots, or it will cost you extra. Mm-hmm. And if you can and you want to, and you have unlimited data, because it does suck up your data badly. I know a guy who said, I wanted to test how fast my 5G was, so I ran the speed test, and it used up all my data for the month.
Oh.
Yep.
Because it's a gigabyte download. That's how it tests. And
ouch.
Yeah. And, well, so he then had to pay overages. But for those of you with unlimited data, it's not a big deal.
So check that first before
check
doing anything.
Check that first. But if you have unlimited data and if you can do a hotspot without paying extra, it's a very cool and very easy thing. Connect your Raspberry Pi to it and take it on the road. Get yourself a plug for the car to plug into what we used to call the cigarette lighter.
Mm-hmm.
And now I guess is the auxiliary power port.
12-volt aux. Auxiliary output. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Aux.
So you can have a Raspberry Pi in the car. Which is a pretty clever thing.
Well, you know, that brings up another point, which is another good stocking stuffer gift, is portable charging units. You know, yes. Folks are, carrying around their phones and all that, and we're using them so much, the battery's draining on them. Well, if you're, out and about and not hooked up to your car, they do sell charging units that you
can. Portable power packs.
Yeah, thank you. And you can plug your phone in it and quick charge it up. But, yep, we're coming up on a no.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yeah. I did.
But that's something.
I knew you were getting into it.
Yeah, but that's something we'll discuss when we come back.
Yeah, we're going to take a break. We are done with our first hour, but oh, do not worry, because there's an entire another hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe. Hold on a second. That must be Soundbite coming your way after this slightly longer break. But we'll be back with more of Dave Enright, more of Steve Ray, more of me, Nick Francesco, and a whole lot more of you. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Tell us what you'd like to find in your stocking or under the tree for Christmas. Call us with your computer problems, and we'll be back with more sound bites right here on the Truly Great and Truly Grateful to You. We are member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites, on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 8 minutes after the hour, we are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Sound Bites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. And shall we go to the phones?
Yeah, let's.
Why not? Let's talk to Fred from Rochester, New York. Hi, Fred. What's up?
Here's hoping that all of you had a great Thanksgiving.
You too.
Thank you.
And to all those deadbeats on the air, be grateful for WGMC and Andy Up.
Thank you.
Nice.
I have, you mentioned speed and usage. Do you have a suggestion for a good speed test? And secondly, maybe I need an antenna for a better signal strength. My phone has in the settings about the phone, status info, SIM card status gives me a signal strength of a minus 120 decibels. So it's supposed to be around between minus 30 and minus 100, I think. So that's a twofold question.
Right. The first question is probably the site everybody goes to. There's a couple, but
speedtest.net.
Yeah, speedtest.net is the big one that most people go to. Fast.com is another. Yeah, test my speed.
Fast is run by Netflix because they want to know if your speed is fast enough to watch Netflix videos.
Right, but the one everybody goes to is speedtest.net. There's even an app for your phone. That's the one that person used to eat up all his data for the month. But it does work. It does work pretty well. There are a couple of caveats. What happens is they connect to one of many, many, many test sites and download a one gig file and then upload, I think, 100 meg file. And then they tell the speed based on that. Depending on which site you end up on, and there, like I said, there are many. You can go to Frontier. You can go to RIT. You can go to U of R. There's Syracuse. There's bunches of them. Depending on which one you end up at and how busy it is and what the connection is between you and that space, you may not see your full speed. Like you're paying for 500 meg and you only see 480. That doesn't necessarily mean you're really only getting 480, but with various lags and this and that, you would be getting 480 from that site. But, you know, so I always tell people, as long as you're close, deal with it.
Yeah, because it can also be the equipment at the other end.
That's what I'm saying. It could be busy. For example, I often connect to our IT. And there are times of the day, right, there are times of the day when I get horrible connectivity, and there are times of the night when I get more than what I'm paying for. So it depends on a lot of factors, but it can give you a general idea. So speedtest.net is good, and then there is a speedtest.net app you can download. That's the one I would use personally to do that. As far as your signal strength, that depends. You're never going to change the antenna in your phone. Most of them don't give you the opportunity to add an external antenna anymore. So you're going to want to change your Wi-Fi router is the way you would have to do that.
Well, are you talking about cellular signal strength or Wi-Fi signal strength?
Cellular signal strength.
Yeah. That's different depending on whether you're doing 3G, 4G, and 5G. I found a chart here that a good 3G is between negative 70 and negative 85 decibels, and 4G is negative 90 to negative 100. They don't have the 5G list on here. Many cellular carriers will sell you a microcell, which is a little box that basically your own cell tower that you plug in your house and connect to your internet service. If you're too far away from a cell tower to get good signal strength. Some of the companies charge more than others, but I know that many of them do have that option. And then it uses your internet for a cellular signal, which is a little strange, but okay. But the closer you are to the antenna, the better your signal strength will be. And as Nick said, most phones don't have antennas anymore because people would break them off. In the olden days, you had to pull your antenna out to get that, you know, nice long whip antenna. And then for a while there were nubs, and now all the antennas are inside the phone. So you end up needing the cell tower has to have a bigger antenna, in order to get a better cell signal.
Okay. Would a device mounted outside the house be, a good way to go?
Maybe if you have a cellular antenna of your own that you can put outside your house and then try to run a wire into the antenna that's built into your phone. That's the tricky part.
Yeah, it's going to be hard. Yeah.
The antennas are inside your phone.
They're buried in there and, you know, it's, more or less they use the whole phone as a ground plane to be the antenna and you're part of it too, just holding it.
Okay. So I've seen some stuff advertised. You put up an antenna. There's a little box that you plug in the house, and it's supposed to help yourself.
That's a local access point. And, yes, you can have – we have one here in this building.
Yeah.
And that can help depending on, again, where you are in relation to the cell tower.
It's like a booster.
And how high up you can mount your tower.
Right.
So if you can put it on the roof, it's like the old TV antennas.
Mm-hmm. Exactly
if
right.
If you have a 10-foot pole on top of your roof, you might get pretty good reception out of it.
And you have to make sure you get one that matches who your carrier is.
Okay.
So there's a lot more to it than just let's throw up a wire. Dave does that for his radios. He just throws up a wire and he's good. But for the rest of us, when you're talking about something like a cell tower, it's a very different thing.
And quite often they're unsightly antennas, so your neighbors may not like it when you put one up.
Yeah, quite often some of them you have to get permits.
They're a bit pricey too.
Yeah. Well, I just saw one that's only $1,100. It's on sale for the holiday.
Nice.
Yeah, like you say, mine are easy because they're just wires. But yeah, even with that, I have to do tuning and futzing around with.
Right, but you can get an extra access box, access point. No, that's not what they call them. I forget what they call them.
Femtocells
for getting better signal strength. But it's there's it's a lot more to it than just grabbing the first available box.
Yeah, and popping it up and just there's some futzing around that you got to do.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm inside, the signal strength is rather weak. I live in an old building.
That's the other part of the problem, of course, is that if you have rebar in the walls or whatever,
Faraday cage.
Chicken wire, you're in a Faraday cage, and I get that. One of the things, I'm in a very old house, and I have that issue. The minute I walk in the door, I lose at least two bars. But I pick up my Wi-Fi signal, and I do all my phone calls and everything else through Wi-Fi in the house, and I don't worry about what the signal is inside.
Oddly enough, standing in front of the kitchen sink, I get the best signal.
Probably coming through the window.
And he's, well, it's also grounded. Because he's near the sink, which is, you know, all grounded.
Yeah. Well,
for a cell phone, what am I paying? I have unlimited cell phone, unlimited data.
Yep.
But I don't even know what the speed should be.
That's usually in your contract or on your bill. It will often say what your speed is, whether it's 3G, 4G, or 5G on your cell service.
Or it should say on the phone. Usually on the phone, upper in the upper right-hand corner.
Yeah, that will tell you what band you're on, but it won't tell you what your speed is.
Right. And then what your speed is can vary. For example, 5G can deliver up to 20 gigabits per second. I'll guarantee you, you're not going to get that.
Heck no, that's in a dream world.
Right, that's in an ideal lab situation. The fact is that your phone isn't fast enough to do 20 gigabits per second first.
Yeah.
So, you know, what you should be getting and what you could be getting and what you are getting are three entirely different things.
I found a chart on Ken's tips. Whoever Ken is.
Yeah, he's got tips, though.
Tips, yeah. 5G is typically 150 to 200 megabit. 4G is in the 50 megabit range. 4G plus, sorry. Even in 4G, there's category 4, 5, 6, 9, 12, right. 16.
I just did the cell test. I just did the speed test on my cell phone, 5G. I'm getting 26 megabytes down. Now, that may seem horribly low. I'm in a radio studio.
Yeah.
I'm lucky to get that.
Surrounded by wires.
So it also depends on where you are, how far you are from your tower, just a million different things.
Many different variables.
Yeah.
Which are changing constantly when you're moving around.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okey-doke.
I know that, standing outside, I get, you know, if I'm out near my workplace, it's less densely populated, and I get a fabulous signal there.
Right. It'll be different wherever you are. I'm sorry, Fred. We kind of want to move on.
Okay. Yes. Thank you so much, and keep up the good work.
Thanks, Fred. Have fun. Was it on Twitch? No, it was on YouTube. Val, who is a member, thank you, Val, mentioned that Amazon has free photo storage for members.
Yep.
Which we did forget to mention back when we were talking to Karen. If you are an Amazon Prime member, you can download an app that will back up all your photos. All your photos, because it is unlimited storage. If you are a Prime member, to Amazon Prime. Now you only get 5 gigabytes of
video
storage, but you get unlimited photo storage.
And that's what I ran into because my photo library is a mix of photos and videos. It hit that 5 megabyte video limit and stopped uploading any photos too.
Right. So be very careful and very aware of what you're doing with that. But if you are a Prime member, and many people are these days, if you're a Prime member, you get unlimited picture storage on Amazon Prime, and you download an app, and it works in conjunction with all your other photo apps. Because I still have unlimited on Google because I'm on a Pixel phone, and I also have unlimited on Amazon. So my photos are backed up in two places, which makes me twice as happy. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dave from Irondequoit, New York. Hiya, Dave. What's up?
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. He may have dealt with this issue before, but in doing searches, I couldn't find anything on the website that was kind of solving the problem, which is an old Chromebook and constantly getting these pop-up messages saying that, you know, the updates are coming to an end very shortly. So I keep getting them. But anyway, I was wondering if there's a way around that or if I just go to Norton and start using that on the Chromebook.
Okay, I'm afraid I didn't hear most of that.
Well, he's saying that his Chromebook, he keeps getting the notices that, you know, it's coming to end of life.
Right, and it depends on what's giving you that notice. The Chrome OS itself will give you that notice, and there's virtually nothing you can do about it except, well, keep using it in an unsafe manner.
Right, at some point, you could buy another Chromebook. Right, that would be it. We can post, there's a list of end-of-life, Chromebook end-of-life.
And you can get it from inside your Chromebook, too.
And you can also get it from inside your Chromebook. If you open up Settings and About Chrome OS and then Additional Details, it will tell you the update schedule. Mine says this device will get automatic software and security updates until June 2026. So you will see what the date is for your particular Chromebook. And the reality is that Chromebooks, like every other operating system on the planet, eventually the hardware goes out of goes end of life. And if you want to continue getting updates, you need a new device. That's
life.
That's life.
Yeah. And so what happens is it means that there won't be any bug fixes, there won't be any security fixes, and so it's dangerous to use on the internet because the bad guys will be waiting for these end of life machines to keep being used.
Then you'll start to see more and more hacking of them.
Right. You are still able to use it. It doesn't suddenly stop working. But it's not secure anymore.
Okay, so a third-party program like Norton or Malwarebytes?
That has nothing to do with the operating system. Yeah, that doesn't, you know, if there's a hole, say, that they can exploit in the operating system, Norton or McAfee, none of those will help you stop that. I mean, it's a hole in the operating system. They have no control over that.
Okay, got it. It's very disappointing about the.
Well, they give you like 8 years.
Yeah, I mean.
The old ones had five years, I think.
And the new ones have eight years.
People were very disappointed at only 5 years service, so the newer ones are 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
And again, they're still a this lot one, cheaper than, you know, back in the day when.
You had to spend $1,000 to get a new computer.
Yeah.
Yeah. This machine here is got it in 2021. It goes to 2026. It's still just 5 years. If I bought a new one today, I'd get 8 years. But yeah, I understand what you're saying, but they're not. There's no device on the planet that's eternal.
Oh, granted. I was just hoping I could get. I did have some problems with it with the screen, but it we were able to call him in, and you guys able to. Coach me through that, so it got a year ago. It got some extra life. So.
Yeah, it may be possible to remove Chrome and put Linux on it. It depends on the hardware that it has. You could put a modern version of Linux,
right?
But the Chrome OS itself will be out of date and stop receiving security updates
at whenever it says on that page.
Yeah.
Okie doke.
Okay, so obsolescence is the key, I guess. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, David. Before we go back to the phones, let me just remind everybody that tomorrow night at 9 p.m., we will be having the lounge. Just go to soundbites.org/lounge, and at 9 p.m. there will be a link to the video chat, and you can join us with or without video and with or without voice, but we will be there for an hour screwing around, answering computer questions.
Yeah. And I don't want to say it's not really about obsolescence. It's how long can you expect a company to support a product that they haven't made in 5, 8, 10 years?
Right.
Do you want to force them to make updates for 20 years? Then everything you have is going to cost a whole lot more because they're going to have to hire more programmers to do that. And so what we typically see in the computer world is 5 to 8 years is pretty common.
Yep. Yeah. It's just the way it is. You know, it's like with car. Look, my car is 12 years old. And honestly, we don't like to think about this. Mm-hmm. It's not as safe as a brand new car.
Yeah.
That's just a fact.
And even with cars, unless you have like a classic desirable car, it's going to be hard finding parts.
Yeah, that's true.
Unless you go to a junkyard and find one of those old cars that's broken differently.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Rich from Irondequoit, New York. What's up, Rich?
Hi, guys. Happy Thanksgiving.
Same to you.
I guess I got a two-part question because I'm just listening to what you've been talking about. With the Chrome OS, you can't get another version, if you will, and load it onto your Chromebook?
Yes, they update automatically until they reach end of life.
So end of life is end of life.
Mm-hmm. Well, for Chrome OS, but as Steve said, depending on the model, there are models where you can load Linux or you can load the Cloud Ready. And or a couple of other OSs.
And it's exactly the same with Macs and PCs.
Right.
Eventually, you cannot load the new OS on it anymore.
Right.
And so you're stuck with an old OS or a different OS.
And that's why we say even on the old PCs, you know, 386s, 486s, you can put a version of, you know, Linux on it and it'll run.
My son asked me the other day if I had any old PCs at the office that he could play with. And I said, yeah, I'm sure we got a few of them. He said, yeah, do you have anything with an i7?
Yeah.
No, I've got Pentiums. I pulled a Celeron out of the closet.
There you go.
I have old PCs.
Yeah.
All right, well, I guess back to my original question, if you don't mind, and I think this one's directed more towards Steve. Can you use an iPad to operate or be on a Chromecast?
It depends. You can use the Chrome browser, which can Chromecast. So anything in the Chrome browser will Chromecast.
My iPad would have to have the Chrome browser on it.
Right.
And then I could cast that to the Chromecast.
Right. Anything in the Chrome browser. I don't think you can cast the entire iPad screen, just the Chrome browser.
Okay.
The iPad does have Apple's AirPlay built in. So an Apple TV set-top box, or we're also seeing some newer TVs are coming with Apple TV software built in. So they've got the Amazon software built in, they've got the Roku software built in, they've got Android software built in. So a lot of this new smart TVs are multi-OS, which is kind of neat.
In addition, by the way, if you have Google Play Movies and TV app on your Chromebook, on your iPad, you can bring up a movie and hit play and cast that. So it's both.
I'm just kind of looking for, I've got an older TV, not an older TV, but a TV that we want to like place into my wife's room for just watching any little thing or being able to cast her iPad on it just to be able to use that and use that bigger, little bit of a bigger screen.
Yeah. You could also look at a used Apple TV, and then you can cast the entire iPad screen.
Right. Listen, we got to take a break.
Okay, thank you.
Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 29 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1, turn your radio down. 2, turn your radio down lower. 3, remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4, make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5, calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6, if you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7, is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Joan Jett.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Bob from Henrietta, New York on the line. What's up, Bob?
Oh, good afternoon. The guy who was thinking about doing speed tests over his wireless or his cellular data connection might want to think carefully about that. I recently was dragged kicking and screaming into buying a new phone because too much stuff on the old one just wouldn't work anymore. So it was a 5G phone, and I wanted to do a speed test or two on it when I was close enough to a 5G tower to get that service. I ran three of them, and then my data carrier warned me that I'm close to my monthly quota.
Yep.
Turns out that speed test uses between a quarter and a third of a gig for a speed test.
Depends on where you are and what you're doing. Mine use a gig per speed test.
Yeah, that's a month. That's a month's allocation.
Exactly. For some people, if you have, that's why we said if you know, be aware that if you don't have unlimited data, you probably don't want to run a speed
check
test.
And also, yeah, check first.
Well, also a lot of companies are weaselly with their unlimited data. You get unlimited data, but after a gig, it slows way down.
Yep.
It's still unlimited. There's no limit to the amount of data. There is a limit to the speed of the data.
Well, I'm a very light user, so I had basically 1 gig unlimited everything else. I had no idea speed test site used that much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It used to only use a few hundred K back when, you know, 1 meg was fast.
Right.
But now when we've got, you know, gigabit lines, it's got to download more so it can average out the time.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. That's why we should
get out before he gets an unpleasant surprise as I did.
Yep.
Appreciate that, Bob. Thanks.
Have a good night.
You too. Bye-bye. He's absolutely right. Be aware of that. On your desktop, it often doesn't matter. Right? Most people don't have metered
for their landline internet. Yeah.
Right.
At least in Rochester.
Hello? Right. But if you have any sort of metering, whether it's through your internet connectivity or your cell phone connectivity,
I can't hear you. Speak up, please.
Be very careful of what you're doing as far as that stuff is concerned.
And I can say sometimes it's interesting to see how much data you've actually done.
Don't ever look.
28 gigabytes down and 24 gigabytes up. And I think that's a week. Because I usually reboot every week.
Thank you. All right, our next caller is Steve from Greece, New York. What's up, Steve?
First I want to say happy Thanksgiving and good afternoon, and thank you for being there for us.
You're always welcome, and happy Thanksgiving to you.
A friend gave me his Dell G5. He's got blue screen he can't get past. And I can't put in my hirons because of the boot order. And so I know you can't pull up the screen I have in front of me. So I understand that. So let me ask a couple questions. When I have a UIFI boot pass security, the options I get are always accept internal hard drive, always accept internal hard drive, and PXE, always and never. I don't know what the PXE is, and I'm thinking to get in, I need to go to never.
PXE, or Pixie boot, as they call it, is the pre-boot execution environment. It's basically a client-server thing that boots an internet thing. So if you're not part of a company, it is very unlikely that you have
got those
booting
instructions to boot.
Right.
Okay, so I should turn the security to never to get in.
Probably. Let's. So on a Dell, usually if you hit, I forget if it's F2 or F12.
Yeah.
I think it's F12. You get a list of the devices you can boot from. Do you not get that?
I didn't try that. I've been trying to boot from the Hiron's thumb drive. It's not working. When I know the drive does work.
Yeah, no. Right. If you turn the machine right off.
Yeah, I've done it.
All right, hold on a minute. If you turn the machine right off, and then when it turns on for a brief second, like Nick was saying, it'll tell you what F key or whether it's the escape key or whatever to get to that menu where you can have those boot options.
The Acer I was playing with
tonight. I'm in the BIOS right now.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'm in the BIOS. So I'm just trying to figure out how to set it up so I can use the thumb drive.
Well, go to boot order.
Boot order, yeah.
Okay. I've turned off secure boot. So boot sequence does, I'm at boot sequence.
Yep.
I have the option of Windows Boot Manager, and then I have a boot list option, and of that I only have UEFI. When I go to view, it doesn't show anything. It says I can add a boot option, but when I go to that, it gives me file system list, which is not what I want. I want to get to the external thumb drive. If I do advanced boot options, I can turn on the enable reading stuff today. Enable legacy option ROMs. I don't think that's correct.
Well, it depends if your boot disk is UEFI or BIOS.
Yeah. The other thing you could do is whatever you're trying to copy off of that USB drive, burn it to a bootable CD. Because normally if the system can't find a hard drive and it senses a CD in there, it'll give you the option to boot to a CD.
Right, but it doesn't have a CD. There's no optical burner on this one.
Okay.
How old is this Dell?
He didn't tell me, but I know he's had it for a pretty long time. I'm going to say
that's odd then that it doesn't have an optical drive.
No, yeah.
How long do you think?
Oh, 8-10 years.
Yeah,
that's very odd that it doesn't have a CD drive.
Well, but that if he doesn't see a CD drive, there's no CD drive. But
no.
It is also odd that that does not present you. It's odd that it does not present you with a boot order that includes a floppy disk and
or
the hard drive.
Or a USB drive.
And a USB drive. If it does not, then I think you might be looking in the wrong place. I mean, I just this week did the same thing for a friend with a Dell. I did a check of the hard drive and installed Linux on it and everything else. And it was a matter of F12 as it booted. But
he's already into the BIOS.
And then when you get in, I did it that way, but you could also go into the BIOS and under boot, somewhere under there was just a list. I thought it was under boot order.
It is, yeah.
But it was just a list of all the physical devices.
Right. So I realize I'm taking a bunch of time. I apologize. In settings under general, which is appropriate, is I have boot sequence, advanced boot options, UEFI boot pass security.
If you go to boot sequence.
Yes, which is where I am.
All right, here, wait, let's just.
Tell me what's on that screen.
But he's not seeing. What I was going to suggest, since it's such an old machine. Why not add a CD drive if he's got a CD-ROM drive to it?
If he's got a bootable USB, that's.
But no, he says it's 8 to 10 years old. My experience with machines that old in Dells, that was not in part of the BIOS. I know what you're talking about, that you should be able to pull it up. And, one of the options is either the CD-ROM drive, the USB, or the floppy, or the hard drive.
Okay, let me ask a question. If I put in a CD reader.
Mm-hmm.
I'd also have to change the boot sequence to read the CD reader first.
But it'll pop up because right now you're not seeing it because there's nothing there hooked up, just like you don't see a floppy drive.
But if you go into F12 to the boot order, it should see the USB to boot from.
What do you see when you select boot order?
So they call it boot sequence.
Okay.
I see a checkbox for Window Boot Manager. Then I see a boot list options. It gives me legacy external devices, which is grayed out. And
if you uncheck the Windows boot options, does it then allow you to select the external?
No, it does not. I've already tried that.
Yep.
I do have the UEFI, which is...
It surprises me that old a computer has UEFI.
Yeah.
Well, it's supposed to be a gaming computer. I don't know if that makes a difference.
Yeah, Dell would. But, all right.
Yeah, I would try. Well, the first thing I would try is rebooting and hitting F12 and see what you get as a list.
Okay.
But the second thing I would do is what Dave says, is that if you have access to a USB...
or CD drive.
CD drive. Try it.
Okay. Now, one quick thing. Secure boot. Is that something that Windows put in so you can only boot from internally?
Well, if you... depends.
And only Windows.
Right.
Yep.
So if you uncheck secure boot... you may have a bunch of different options.
Okay. So deployed boot and one last question, I'll let you go. In secure boot, I have deployed mode and audit mode. Deployed mode is checked.
Yeah, if you uncheck that, those should all go away.
All right. I will give that a chat, and if not, I'll talk to you Sunday night.
Yep, you will. Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. Yeah, that's weird. I don't know. I honestly don't know. Of course, the other thing is, depending on which Dell you have and which model and yada, 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 they did a lot of interesting things. Dell worked with a lot of companies.
Hello?
And one of the things they did with Windows was, you know, I had a problem with one machine that just absolutely would not connect to wireless. And I realized that the chip they were using was that one chip that didn't do anything except to connect to a Windows DLL.
Mm-hmm.
And then the DLL actually did all the work. Well, nobody else made that DLL for any other operating system or anything else. So I get that. You know, there's just those weird things that they do. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Hi, Mark. What's up?
Hey, Nick. How are you?
Peachy. How are you?
Oh, I'm hanging in there. Happy Thanksgiving.
You too.
I wanted to say, I've got an old Dell Optiplex that's running Linux now. And the only way I could change that was going in F12. That's the only way I could do it. I could go blue in the face in the BIOS. I could not change the boot order in the BIOS. I had to use F12.
Well, especially if you're trying to boot a USB drive, that's not a device in BIOS. So that would just be called, usually I have to turn on legacy USB.
Right.
And then it just looks at any USB device. And then when you F12 it at boot order, it sees the USB device that's plugged in and will let you boot from that.
Let you select.
Makes sense. Thanks, Mark.
Because when I went in with the F12, I just put it to the top of the list.
Yep, there you go.
Included.
There you go. Thank you.
Yep.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
Nope. I was fighting with an old Acer today that trying to install Windows 10, and the current Windows 10 is 6 and something gigs, so my flash drive has got to be XFAT, but I think the computer's too old to read XFAT, so now I got to find an old Windows installer that will fit on a FAT disk.
Yep.
Ooh. Or maybe just reinstall the Windows 7 it had. And then upgrade to 10, that might be the easiest.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
If I can find a Windows 7 disk.
Well, that's why I say that might be part of his thing, too. You know, like you say, because it won't see the USB drive, but if he can hook up the CD-ROM drive, and then it'll see that he flashes everything, you know, make it a bootable CD, which is easy to do, and then put the files on there that you want to execute. Because even if it just gets you to the drive, gets you to that drive letter, then you can execute the program that you want to run or do whatever.
I have the same issue with a gateway. A friend of mine gave me an old gateway laptop, and there's no way to boot from. I'll try the F12. It uses the same F12 key that Dell does. They may be getting their Desktops from Dell.
It can be a
motherboards from Dell.
That was the whole challenge. I mean, you know, back when we had the shop going full board, trying to figure out, because nobody was, there was no standard.
Right.
Some were S, you know, escape. Some were F2. Some were F12. Mm-hmm. Some were the delete key. You know, I mean, they went all over
map. I've run out of fingers to hit to try to see which button it is.
Or it was a control delete, and then and it's like.
And it never stays on screen long enough to read.
No, right. No.
I've even tried videotaping the screen and then frame by frame through it to see what the key is.
Still don't quite catch it.
Yeah, because it flashes. You got to remember, again, and they don't do a standard there as far as what corner that it flashes what key you need to hit to get to the boot sequence.
I've even tried the Chico Marks run your finger down down the keyboard thing. That doesn't work. It's a pain in the neck. But I think on Gateway it's also F12.
I think you're right.
When I get home.
Yeah.
The reality is that Steve is correct. USB, there is no USB device to boot from until you plug in a USB device and the system notices it.
As part of the boot management process, but not the BIOS.
And but so if you hit F12, it runs that part of the boot management process to see what's connected.
Yep.
And so you would see the only if you've already plugged in.
But also
the thing of it is, though,
like he said, though, that machine was 8 to 10 years old.
Yeah.
The BIOS might be so old that it doesn't know of, USB.
And I've had that. I have a very old little laptop, which I would love to get running, but it simply will not recognize under any set of circumstances a USB drive as the boot device.
Yep, because you'd have to find a newer BIOS that you could some way get into there to flash it. And
maybe he's having the XFAT versus FAT problem that it would be booting from that flash drive if it was FAT.
Right.
If the computer is that old, it may not read an XFAT disk.
Yeah.
Right.
We've said that for a long time. Sometimes, you know, the technology is always advancing so fast that, you know, trying to keep up with it. It's a challenge because you sit there and say, well, I just got this machine 5 years ago. It's still running good, but yet it won't do some of this other stuff that you want it to do.
We try to explain to customers that, you know how they say that it's 7 dog years per human year?
Yeah.
Computers are about 10 or 15 human years per computer. So that 5-year-old computer, it's probably 60 to 70 human years old.
That's exactly right.
Remember
and you slow down about that age too.
Yeah.
Remember we used to say back in the day, especially on some of the machines, you know, well, I added all this memory. And we go, well, you're just moving the bottleneck.
That's exactly right.
Because that's what it was doing. You know, just shifting it around because, you know, you can improve one thing, but then it might be shifting it to something else depending on what you're doing and what the requirements are. Just moving the bottleneck.
That's exactly right. And you're never going to get it as fast as a new machine. That's simply a fact of life.
Well, even the new machines, by the time you get it, they're outdated.
I still love that commercial with a guy driving home with the brand new T5 in the box, and he sees people putting up a new billboard for the T6.
Yeah.
Well, we all have experienced that.
Yeah.
I'm that guy. If I buy, you know, ask me if I'm about to buy a new computer and then wait 2 weeks. That's how it works for me. I buy, the next one is coming out 2 weeks from then.
And please, Amazon, stop showing me ads for things I just bought, especially if it's cheaper.
Yeah.
You know I bought it. Stop showing me the ad for it.
Yep.
Well, it's the same thing. There's this one device I want to get, but like you, I know the minute I do, because there's been hints of a newer version come out. And, you know, you just we can't divulge that right now. And it's like, I know if I buy it, that's when it'll come out, and then I want that one. It's like, no.
Although, if you're always waiting for the next thing, you're never going to get anything.
That's exactly right. On the other hand, if you do wait, then you may make the decision to buy the older one now at a reduced price.
Yeah.
But that's a decision, that's an informed decision that you actually made.
And use that extra money to buy a backup drive.
Which you always should have. Again, the number one thing you can do is to buy a nice backup package for your significant other or your children or whatever, you get a family pack or whatever. If you head on over to soundbites.org, you'll see that one of the top posts is you don't have enough backups.
And a good password manager.
No, that's no longer one of the top posts.
Password manager would be another great one for a holiday gift, because then that way you keep your machine safe and easy for you to get passwords that nobody out there will really guess off the bat.
Right.
Because you can make them so long, it's like, yeah, even you won't remember them all.
That's exactly right. That's why you have a backup manager. But head on over to soundbites.org. Top link right now is you don't have enough backups.
We got a lot of great ideas out
there. You can see all that stuff.
You should quickly do that Wegmans breach, because that's pretty local.
Yeah, I should do that. Oh, Wegmans has notified customers that some of their data were exposed because two of its cloud-based databases were misconfigured, making them publicly accessible online. In a publicly posted breach notification letter, Wegmans said that the issue was first brought to the company's attention when a third-party security researcher pointed out the configuration problem. Then, and I quote, on or about April 19th, Wegmans confirmed the issue. It's not clear whether April 19th is when the issue was reported to Wegmans, when the databases were left open to public access, or whether that's just when Wegmans confirmed that they'd been exposed. Likewise, it's not clear whether or not customers' data were left in open databases months or even years before it was reported and or confirmed. The databases contain customer information, including names, addresses, phone numbers, birth dates, shopper club numbers, email addresses, passwords for access to Wegmans.com accounts. The company added that all of the affected account passwords were salted and hashed, which is good, meaning that the actual passwords were obscured, not viewable in the databases, which makes them better than GoDaddy. Wegmans' letter said that the company worked diligently with leading forensic firms to investigate and determine the incident scope, identify the information in the two databases, ensure the integrity and security of their systems, and correct the issue. Social security numbers, payment card, or banking information were not, I repeat, not involved in the breach, Wegmans said. Wegmans' reassurance that the password was hashed and salted is a good thing, but it's not exactly a get-out-of-jail-free card. A salt is a random string attached to a password before it's cryptographically hashed. The salt isn't a secret. It's just there to make sure that two people with the same password get different hashes. That stops hackers from using rainbow tables of pre-computed hashes to crack passwords and from cross-checking hash frequency against password popularity. In a database of unsalted hashes, the hash that occurs most frequently is likely to be the hashed version of the notorious popular 1.123456. But salting hashing a password isn't quite enough. To stand up against the password cracking attack, a password needs to be salted and hashed over and over again many thousands of times. Failing to do so runs afoul of conventional data protection methods, poses significant risks, et cetera, et cetera. So anyway, if you've used your Wegmans password anywhere else, change them all. Check your bank statement regularly to watch for suspicious activity and start being wary of any email purporting to come from Wegmans, no matter how legit it looks. Are you a Wegmans customer? Of course you are. I'd ask you to give us a call, but we're just about out of time, so there's no point in doing that at the moment. But, yeah, if you are a Wegmans customer, and that's not a big if, that's a pretty definite if.
Yeah, it's pretty
Change your passwords. Change your passwords immediately. If you're one of those people, particularly if you're one of those people who uses the same password multiple times. Never reuse a password. Never, ever, ever use the same password on two different sites. But most of you have done that. So if you have used your Wegmans password somewhere else, you better start changing them everywhere, because people are going to be digging into your stuff.
I guarantee it. One other place, they've probably done it on multiple.
Because remember, they're not doing this to get at you. They're doing this to get at everybody, and you're part of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
It's all automated. They don't care about you. They just want to get at your money.
Yep.
So
be
it
$5 or $500.
Right. If you've got $5, they'll take it.
Yeah, they're not.
Yep.
They're not proud. They'll take it.
The FBI has said that they're expecting more than $53 million in fraudulent charges and losses this year. Because in 2020, holiday season, $53 million in fraudulent losses were reported.
So that's just what was reported.
Yeah, 17,000 complaints were reported. And so this year's going to be more than that.
Yep.
Yeah, because some folks are ashamed.
Be vigilant.
So start being cynical.
Yeah.
Not just wary, but absolutely cynical. Your immediate response to every email, every text, everything should be, yeah, right. All right, that music tells us we are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to those to whom we did not get. We had a lot of calls this week. And I want to thank Dave Enright and Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. I hope each and every one of you had a great, great Thanksgiving. And as this next month full of holidays comes along, I hope that all your holidays are merry, joyful, solemn, blessed, and happy. And we will see you next week and a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great and Truly Grateful to You. Member-supported Jazz 90.1, 59 minutes after the hour. We'll see you in just 166 hours.
This is 90.1 WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District.